Distance learning is once again becoming the norm as school districts around the country begin to shut down all over again. Also, many colleges and universities had already planned to switch to virtual classes after the Thanksgiving holiday. It all adds up to millions of parents around the country trying to figure out how to help, facilitate, and generally not mess up their children's education. That's where the new book, The Distance Learning Playbook for Parents, comes in. The book was written by four educators to try and help parents make sense of this new normal in learning. Here to talk about it is one of those authors, Rosalind Wiseman, a longtime educator and author whose book Queen Bees and Wannabes was the source material for the movie Mean Girls. I asked about the new book and why she and her three co-authors took on the project.
Yeah, I took this project on because I felt like I didn't have a choice, that as a parent, as an educator, I needed to give the best resources and best information I could to parents. And now, even with schools that had started off hybrid or, you know, in person at some point, so many schools are going to 100% online right now. So it feels like it's even more relevant.
And who is this book for? Is it just for parents?
Well, like everything I do, all of the books I write, all the work I do, I have young people who help me write the book. And in this particular book, in the Distance Learning Playbook, I co-wrote the book with three other educators. But my section, I had teenagers really review and critique everything I was doing. And my section is all about how do you manage yourself during this process? And how do you have productive conversations with your kids when things can get really tense or just exhausted or frustrating, or they are frustrated with their teachers? Like, how do we go through this? So I had young people edit everything I did. And so the answer to your question is, yes, it is for parents, but I also very much wrote it, and the other writers wrote it for young people, that you would be able to read it and get something out of it as well.
And how do you put together a roadmap for distance learning for parents when 12 months ago, we didn't know what distance learning was?
I know. Well, you know, here's the thing. I have the great good fortune of being able to be in constant conversation with young people, and they're telling me what's going on in their lives. And that's been the case my entire career, which is like more than 20 years. I was hearing immediately from young people what their experiences were with online learning when we first started in March. And then I kept talking to them and kept asking them, and I continue to do that to this day. So you're right. I mean, I've been teaching for a long time, but I've had to become, you know, really pretty proficient at distance learning myself. I teach teachers for a living. Like, not only do I write, but I teach teachers about how to create engaged classrooms and classrooms where young people feel welcome and they're going to take the right kinds of risks, like academic risks, or say like, oh, like right now, I don't feel comfortable being on camera right now. And I don't feel comfortable asking you a question. Or maybe the teacher forgot to set the chat limitations so that it was so that kids were able to chat and be sort of nasty to each other during, you know, privately during an online class. There are so many different things that we've had to learn. And so the learning curve has been really high, but I also really take seriously my responsibility to young people and to teachers and parents about how to give them the best resources possible, no matter what situation we're in.
Are you writing this from the angle of what teachers would like from parents, or the angle of what parents need to survive?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, I guess I have both heads in my head, those both perspectives all the time, because I teach teachers and I work with teachers so much, and I'm a parent myself. And I've certainly had my frustrations watching my own children have online learning. Last week, we had a very difficult experience with my senior in high school's education, where I had to really, you know, use my work hat to keep my parenting head calm. Say it that way. So I think that I'd like to think that I'm always thinking about from both perspectives, because we do need to give each other a lot of grace. We need to give teachers a lot of grace. And there is a line that I am constantly thinking about in my profession and as a parent, is where's the line between holding grace for people and giving them the benefit of the doubt and knowing it's a really hard time right now and we're exhausted and all of that, and holding each other accountable so that our children's education doesn't suffer. And I know it's really hard right now, especially because we've been doing this for so long. And then many, many school districts around the country are getting more restrictive and our communities are getting more restrictive. I live in Colorado where things are really shutting down again. But I really do think that we need to focus on the two things of giving each other grace and, as a part of that, holding each other accountable so our kids' education doesn't suffer, because young people's education is suffering.
With that, reminds me of a line that was very early in the book where you say, be easy on people, but hard on ideas. I really like that.
Thank you. Yeah. So thank you for saying that, because at my organization at Cultures of Dignity, we're huge proponents of using principles to guide our actions and our decisions and our actions. And so that's why in the distance learning playbook, we did these 10 principles of moving forward and how to conduct oneself. And that one that you, that's actually one of my favorites too, because we live in a culture that really does the opposite, right? Like a person makes one mistake and we gang up on them, and then we can be really easy on ideas. And so I want to flip that to be easy on people and hard on ideas, because when we're hard on ideas, we can actually get to a place where solutions are possible and we're not just beating each other up so much all the time.
Want to talk about some of the basics that you do talk about in the book. And one of them, the first one you mentioned, of course, is establishing routines. How important is that? I imagine it really is.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think it's important for all of us. I certainly, for parents and for young people alike. You know, so I'm going to say this, and I think, again, like, I think this is true for all of us. So I define happiness, and again, this is one of the tenets of my work, is meaning beyond oneself, a hope of success, meaningful social connection, and a place to process and find peace. And so I think the routine in the beginning of the day and the end of the day, again, for everybody in the family, is to have a place to process and find peace, beginning and end of the day. In the middle of the day, you're looking for how to contribute to something beyond yourself, a meaningful social connection. And so to get into brass tacks, if our kids are in online school for whatever it is, 5-6 hours a day, and then what we can see from the research is that we have to have some kind of meaningful social connection and maintain that. And of course, that's going to be mostly online and social media. So if you give 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours, to what I would call, for my colleague, Deborah Heitner, who's just an extraordinary educator and focuses on social media, she focuses social media on connection, creation, and consumption. And so if you can do and focus your routine on connection and creation for 90 minutes, 2 hours, and do the least amount possible of consumption, which is like scrolling through Instagram or doom scrolling, as I think I've been reading, or which I love, and I so am guilty of that. If we can limit that consumption part, that also helps us maintain our mental health. So we 90 minutes, 2 hours of creation or connection, like, you know, FaceTiming with a grandparent or a college roommate, you know, for a parent or friends, that even can include multiple player video games. But then an hour before you go to bed, all screens are done. So then you're back to being able to process or find peace. Then you have a routine that helps you, support your physical and mental well-being.
And this is not something that you just say, okay, student, here's your routine. They really have to be involved in setting that, don't they?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that. Yes, because from the best of intentions, adults have frequently said to kids, I know what it was like to be your age, you know, as a way to maybe sympathize or to relate, but actually what we need to be doing is not relating. We need to be validating. It is always the case that you might've been young once, and there are times, I mean, you were, right? We all were. I was in middle school once, I was in high school once. And at the same time, like, I have a very different, everyone has a very different experience. And so I would much, much rather adults, teachers and parents and grandparents say to kids, and this is even before the pandemic, I don't know what it's like to be your age today. And I really would like to know, like, what your experience is and what you're thinking about it. And then any advice that you give them comes later, after you get a recognition and show recognition that their lives are really different. And before the pandemic, you know, our kids didn't grow up with privacy. We did. They didn't grow up, you know, they didn't grow up with constantly social media trying to make them feel insecure or fear of missing out or all different kinds of things. And that's what they were living with before the pandemic. The rates of anxiety and depression were literally unprecedented for young people before the pandemic. And now they've gone through this experience. So we really need to say to them, I actually don't know what it's like to grow up, you know, today. And I really would like to know. And then you can give them advice. And the way I just, the other principle I have is that listening is being prepared to be changed by what you hear. And my experience, if you reach out to young people the way that I said, they really will talk to you in a very different way and really tell you what's going on with them. They're much more likely to tell you what's really going on with them instead of just starting to assume they know that you understand what they're going through.
Which again reminds me of something you bring up later in the book, is parents have to find the balance between helping and just getting in the way, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there are studies of, and I love, there are studies where, I understand, I feel it myself as a parent of like, oh my gosh, is my child learning any, are my children learning anything right now? Like anything. And so one of the things that we know from research is that if a child's sitting at a laptop and a parent is hovering over them and, you know, quote unquote, helping them with their homework or their work, that the parent's anxiety tends to go down, but the child's anxiety tends to go up. And, you know, parent will walk away being like, okay, well, you know, we figured that out. We did that homework. We did that assignment. But actually, unless you really are, they've asked you for help or you've said, hey, like, I don't know what it's like to be your age now. I don't know what my entire schooling on Schoology. I don't even know how to work Schoology. Like I don't, you know, or all of the platforms that kids are using today. You have to sit and learn and listen. And then you can try and help them through it. And I'd be very concrete and ask them, like, what is the specific thing that you need support about? I mean, I just went through a process. So I have an older teen. I mean, I have one who's 19 as well. I just went through the process of a 17-year-old who understandably really wants to do things on his own and was having increasingly logistical problems and problems with his teachers. And so I had to get involved, but all through the way, age appropriately, but you are looking for ways to give young people ownership so they can develop skills and capacities, which really frankly could be just as simple as if your child is frustrated with a teacher, they need to learn how to write an email that I'm getting a lot of feedback from teachers that they're getting what is perceived to be rude emails from kids. But kids don't really know how to write professional or just emails like, hi, Mrs. Smith, I'm having problem accessing, you know, Schoology, my password's changing. So I'm not really sure about the assignment. What are the things that you think I should do? Like those kinds of things. Instead, they're just sort of demands. And then teachers, you know, get frustrated with that and their tempers are short right now, or patience is worn thin. So just doing a really concrete skill building about like, how do you correspond with somebody is actually a lifelong skill that's really important for your child to have anyway. So it's this balance, it's this constant balance of teaching capacity. How can I teach my child capacity? What can I identify as giving them ownership of something? And then being able to say, okay, when are they in a situation where this is overwhelming? And I need to be, for the most part, behind the scenes, helping them by asking them questions and getting them to a place where they are advocating for themselves.
Still to come, our conversation with Rosalind Wiseman continues with a look at something else teachers didn't have to deal with this time last year, Zoom etiquette. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett, and our guest today is Rosalind Wiseman, a longtime educator and author. We're talking about her new book called The Distance Learning Playbook for Parents. One thing parents, teachers, and students have all had to adapt to is another term we never heard of 12 months ago, Zoom etiquette.
We knew, but when we were writing the book, that young people didn't like being on camera all the time. We didn't know to the extent how much so many young people do not like being on camera all the time. I know much more now about young people feeling insecure, feeling like they don't want other people judging them, which is normal middle school and high school reactions, but just it's so magnified right now. So this is such a tough spot, which is we want young people to be able to turn off their cameras because of the developmental issues of feeling insecure or the equity issues of what their backgrounds are, whatever. On the other hand, when they don't turn their cameras on, it's so much easier to be disengaged from the classroom. That we didn't, I'll speak for myself. I did not understand the real dynamic tension between those two things. And so that's what we're, that's actually the stuff that I'm doing with teachers right now is trying to figure out how do we create space so young people feel comfortable and can work with teachers to create norms in the classroom, social media norms, Zoom etiquette norms that they are part of and feel ownership of, so that they're much more likely to be engaged in the classroom, regardless of what the content of the classroom is. And so we need to just, you know, we need to be able to identify the issues and then work with young people to create a solution.
Sure. Let's put someone on camera constantly when they are the most insecure about their looks that they ever will be.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. I mean, you should see the quotes I have from kids in the surveys we do. It just breaks your heart. So we got to figure this out. We will figure it out. And educators and young people together will work it out. We will figure this out.
Well, there is a section in the book you have the value of, and you list many things, and almost more than half of those things were all the language arts, reading, vocabulary, writing. How important is keeping those language arts up in distance learning?
Oh my gosh, so much. So, you know, here's the thing, like to a certain extent, to really a large extent, I don't care what our children are reading, if they are reading a book. And I know if people are listening to this and are thinking, yeah, my kid hasn't read a book in, you know, I don't know, several years. Like there's lots of parents who have 9 and 10 year olds, 11 year olds, 12 year olds, who are reading a lot. And I remember that those days were like, oh my gosh, my kid loves to read. This is so awesome. Which it is. It's totally incredible. And it's one of the reasons we go into it so much about how to know what to focus on in the book, in the distance learning playbook. There's really a lot, as you mentioned, about here's what you need to know. About what, you know, your child needs to be doing based on their grade level while they're distance learning. And I would go back to this thing of just reading. I would say to a child, if they're not reading as much as they used to anymore, they can read. I don't care what they read. The people who wrote this book with me don't care either. They really, it doesn't matter as, you know, a comic, like graphic novel, amazing. If your kid loves graphic novels, which a lot of young people do because they're incredible, the art is amazing. They're works of art in many ways. I would strongly encourage a child to be, for example, reading a graphic novel. So all to say, they don't need to be reading the things that you think of when you think of reading a book. They need to be reading what they think of because they just need to sit down and get their eyeballs off the screen and keep that love of learning that they can do through reading.
Another thing you bring up, and this is so important, is trying to keep their social life alive. It's almost impossible now with distance learning.
I know this is such a challenge. So, but it's not, look, we're going to get through this. We are getting through this every day. We are getting through this. So remember I talked about social media, if we can separate it into these three buckets of connection, creation, and consumption. Sure. And the routine, for example, of your children FaceTiming with a grandparent, a camp friend, a friend. You know, kids children, especially even within families, of course, can have different comfort levels of how they like to connect. Every way that they want to connect in my mind is fine. So if it's FaceTime, great. If it's a video game, great. If it's a group chat with their friends, although a lot of young people are saying to me, there's not a lot to talk about in their group chats anymore, which is really sort of funny to me, right? Right? It's like group chats used to be this thing, like your best friends were in your group chat and then you would gossip and talk about what's been happening in your life. But since there's not that much happening in your life, there's not much to talk about in your group chat. But as a parent, you need to really affirm how important friendships are right now, because they are, and they're important to a parent's well-being as well, to all of us. So setting aside the time to maintain that and to affirm it. And also if your child has a conflict with a friend, because parents now have more of a window into their child's education because we can hear sometimes more like the classes, for example, or we're more knowledgeable about their friendships in ways we didn't realize. If you hear something that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that kid is talking to my child this way, or, you know, their friendship is bad, I would strongly recommend not really focusing on the kid that you're angry at. I would focus on, we'd have an exercise in the distance learning playbook that does this, where you really take a 30,000 foot view in that moment. And you say to your child, not at that moment, because then your child will freak out and shut down, but like, look for a moment and say to your child, I just want to talk to you for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, unless you want to talk to me more. I noticed the friendship's a little bit off. I could be wrong, because you always have to couch it. Like, I could be wrong, but I actually want to just focus on something. I just want to ask you a question. What are the three things that you think are the most important to have in a friendship? Because that's actually way more important to me than, like, you know, particular conflicts you're having with somebody. And if your child says honesty or loyalty, then ask them what that looks like. Get granular. And so your child is getting more emotionally intelligent, and also their anxiety reduces when they can put words to what their feelings are. And then ask them, well, what are the three things that you might think about pausing the friendship? Again, not to do with the specific child. And then get that from them. And then say to them, you know, say to your kid, like, look, I could be wrong, but I just want you to think about and have the friendships that you feel good about, and that you can have boundaries with them, and like, in healthy ways. And so just look at your list and then make a decision. You don't need to make like some grandiose decision, which they really are in a very different place now. They can't. It's much harder for them to say, no, I'm not going to be your friend anymore, because every friendship they have is so valuable to them. But you can use these exercises for them to start developing their boundaries.
Well, finally, what have you learned since you completed this book that you wish you could put in it now?
So some of the platforms and the passwords and the security around that, are they change a lot, and they can be incredibly frustrating for young people. And I would have done, I would have liked to have added, and we are adding that in my own organization, about how to manage your child's frustration when they come up against the wall or the tech problems that so many kids are experiencing. It's gotten better since March, but still, there are real challenges, even if you have good internet service, and a lot of kids don't. And that's a huge equity issue in the country that we are hopefully addressing. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that I would say, it's the thing I said before, which is, where's the line, or how do we hold people accountable and still give them some grace? Because I believe that I know that teachers are really just so in a spot, right? They've had to learn how to do this so quickly. And we're teaching to native tech people who, I mean, it's just hard. Just the whole thing is hard for teachers to just, you know, we've been teaching and honing our craft for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years or whatever it is. And we had to hone our craft in virtual learning in months. So recognizing that that is a significant challenge in all different kinds of ways, and we still have to hold teachers accountable when our kids aren't learning. So that's the thing that I think I would have put more to, but we didn't know a lot of that when we were first starting. We've gone through this, you know, it's messy. Like, life is messy. This is a very good example of life is messy, which is why we really have to focus on the principles of like, treating each other with dignity, being easy on people, hard on ideas, listening is being prepared to be changed by what you hear, asking for help is a strength, not a weakness. These are the principles that will get us through.
Again, the name of Rosalind Wiseman's new book is The Distance Learning Playbook for Parents: How to Support Your Child's Academic, Social, and Emotional Development in Any Setting. It was written with educators Doug Fisher, Nancy Fry, and John Hattie. Sometimes education can be as simple as telling a good story. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Are future teachers being trained for the students of today? I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Andrew Kahn, distinguished service professor at SUNY Buffalo State College, delves into this question.
It's no secret that current education systems point to competency-based learning as a primary component of academic success. Today's students live in a different world than the Western knowledge-based education systems of the past. With multiple sources of information at their fingertips, literally, today's students are craving skills in the physical application of their knowledge. Educators feel this tension as they are now required to be both facilitators of learning and distributors of knowledge. The problem? Future teachers are not being trained to meet the kinesthetic learning needs of today's students. The solution? Story-based learning, or SBL. By using stories as the curricular vehicle and the students' bodies as the assessment tool, teachers draw immediate connections between the curriculum and their students. The students become active co-owners of the content, the process, and the classroom. The student learns the content for their lives rather than memorizing the information for an exam. The doing informs the knowing. The positive outcomes of SBL in schools around the globe include improved test scores, attendance, and in-class participation in every subject area. Perhaps most importantly, SBL offers a practical toolbox for teachers to fill the gaping holes in socio-emotional education. Compromise, collaboration, discipline, creativity, compassion, innovation, research, and critical thinking are the core skills students develop as they build their stories together. SBL re-engages students to their learning by involving them in their education. Students learn they matter, and their stories matter in a world that too often tells them something quite different.
That was Andrew Kahn of SUNY Buffalo State College. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org, and you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.